Welcome to Udcast, episode 41. This is Head of School Dan Glass with you once again, recording live in the Sound Lab here at the Brandeis School of San Francisco. And I'm alone here in the booth today. I thought I might have my friend and colleague Isaac Jacobs with us today, but we're going to push that to another week due to a scheduling snafu on my part. But we will look forward to having that conversation with him soon. Going to start this week, as we tend to do, with a poem. I'm actually just going to read a piece of a poem because this one's a little bit longer, by the late, great John Ashbery. We all of us Americans, people in the world, lost a true giant of poetry just a couple weeks back. When John Ashbery passed away, one of the foundational voices in the New York School poetry movement, and one of the most beautifully dreamy, thoughtful voices in postmodern American poetry. So I was thinking about being in nothingness this week. I'm going to talk a little bit about that, and thought about the fact that physically John Ashbery is no longer with us. And my mind went to this poem. It's called A Last World. These wonderful things were planted on the surface of a round mind that was to become our present time. The mark of things belongs to someone, but if that somebody was wise, then the whole of things might be different from what it was thought to be in the beginning, before an angel bandaged the field glasses. Then one could say nothing, hear nothing, of what the great time spoke to its devisers. All borders between men were closed. Now all is different without having changed, as though one were to pass through the same street at different times, and nothing that is old can prefer the new. An enormous merit has been placed on the head of things, which, bowing down, arrive near the region of their feet, so that the earth stone has stared at them in memory at the approach of an error. Still, it is not too late for these things to die, provided that an enemy will grab them and rush them to the wildest heaven. But having plucked oneself, who could live in the sunlight? And the truth is cold, as a giant's knee will seem cold. A poem actually goes on three pages from there. It's from one of his earlier collections I've long loved. I have the collection of his that I would recommend to all of you. That's from the Tennis Court Oath, which may be his best known book. But there's a collection of his first five books called The Mooring of Starting Out, M-O-O-R-I-N-G, The Mooring of Starting Out, which in the sort of paradox of that title, right? Because you imagine as you start out, you are unmoored to some degree. That kind of paradox and sort of disjunction is always present in Ashbery's work in often really profound and beautiful ways. So this week I've been thinking about the high holidays and this time that is known in Jewish tradition as the Days of Awe, and here in this time between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And Rabbi Batshir Torchio, who is a friend and a teacher of mine, she is somebody who sits on our board of trustees and also is a former Brandeis teacher and parent. She recently described Yom Kippur to me as a time in which we are stripped of everything in order to be with everything. Rabbi Torchio explained that one way Jewish thinkers have conceived of this process is through yesh, which means being, or sort of the materiality of anything, and ayin, which means nothingness, but a sort of nothingness that even it's so much the absence of anything that it becomes everything. On Yom Kippur, we leave the trappings of the mortal world, right? We're disassociating from our bodies in order to let go of our particularity, of our physical beings, our yesh, to become part of or connected to this nothingness that is everything, to spirit or to God, or however one might choose to conceive of such a thing. In a way that would make my philosopher father proud, I'm sure, where my mind went in this conversation about yesh and ayin was to Jean-Paul Sartre's existential treatise, Being and Nothingness. I feel like that R-E ending to Sartre's name reminds me of that scene in There's Something About Mary, where they're trying to pronounce Brett Favre's name, Favre. Anyway, Being in Nothingness. So really interesting book. I read it as an undergrad in an existentialism class, existentialism in literature and film. And it's in it, he's worrying over a world in which we are deeply alienated and disconnected from each other and ourselves. And there's a little vignette where he describes a waiter in a cafe, and he says, quote, his movement is quick and forward, a little too precise, a little too rapid. He bends forward a little too eagerly. His voice, his eyes express an interest that is a little too solicitous for the order of the customer. All his behavior seems to us a game. But what is he playing? We need not watch long before we can explain it. He is playing at being a waiter in a cafe. There is nothing there to surprise us. And when I went back to that quote, I was interested in that notion of surprise. The sort of apart from the kind of cynicism of, you know, just watching this waiter and watching this scene play out and feeling its falseness, right? The question of surprise, I thought, was curious. And I asked myself, what would it mean to be surprised by this waiter? Or similarly, what would it mean to be surprised by ourselves or the lives that we lead in our day-to-day existence? And my mind went here to the work of Viktor Shklovsky. Boy, I have to say, it was much easier writing all of this on a page than actually pronouncing these names, although I did share some of these ideas at a recent board meeting of ours. Viktor Shklovsky, who is a Russian formalist critic, a very influential critic in the 20th century in thinking around art and especially literature. He, in an essay of his called Art as Technique, he wrote, if we start to examine the general laws of perception, we see that as perception becomes habitual, it becomes automatic. Thus, for example, all of our habits retreat into the area of the unconscious automatic. Art exists that one may recover the sensation of life. It exists to make one feel things, to make the stone stony. The technique of art is to make an object unfamiliar. And I think here Shklovsky is talking about something that is very much present in Being in Nothingness, right? Like the role of art is to make that waiter a surprise, to make us encounter that moment, that routine habitual moment in the cafe as a surprise, as being unfamiliar. It's a process that Shklovsky wrote about a lot that became known as defamiliarization, and I've written about it elsewhere here in the Word of the Week, and I'm not sure I've actually spoken on it here on the Yudcast, but it's a way that we get reacquainted with the world by becoming estranged from it. We strip the familiar and see the object or the moment anew. I turn here to a quote from Rabbi Alan Liu of blessed memory, who was a longtime leader of Congregation Beth Shalom here in San Francisco, and somebody who wrote a lot on the connection between Buddhist practice and Jewish practice. And he has a really wonderful book called This Is Real and You Are Completely Unprepared, The Days of Awe as a Journey of Transformation. And in that, he writes, in the visible world, we live out our routine and sometimes messy lives. We have jobs, families, and houses. Our lives seem quite ordinary and undramatic. It is only beneath the surface of this world that the real and unseen drama of our lives is unfolding. Only there that the walls of the house crumble and fall, that the horn sounds 100 times, that the gate between heaven and earth opens, and the great books of life and death open as well. It is there that the court is convened, that we rehearse our own death, that the gate closes again, that we finally come home to the mere idea of the very house that crumbled and fell in the first place. So here, Rabbi Liu is really describing the same thing that Rabbi Torchio is describing, the yesh and the ayin, that the yesh of our physical selves and our daily lives, you have to let that drop away in order to see the grand stage of the spirit upon which we are all in fact playing. And I want to just call out a very quotidian parenting moment that I had this week that brought this home for me. I was sitting very early in the morning on the couch in our living room and working. I tend to work early in the mornings from 5:30 or so until about 6:30 or 7 when the rest of my household starts to stir. And Alma, our kindergartner, came out to the living room and sat down with me on the couch and sort of snuggled up against me and was in the process of, coming to an awareness of the morning and waking up. And my first thought was, I need to get this email finished. And I sort of said, Alma, I'll be with you in just a sec. And she said, I wish you would read to me. And this is not a unfamiliar dialogue. She likes to read books or play games. And often, the mornings before school don't offer us such time as that. And then she said, actually, Daddy, I wish I could read to you. And Alma's in kindergarten and really, starting to put together the building blocks of reading for herself, and so this is very much developmentally where she's at. And I kind of took a breath, and I closed my laptop, and I said, "Okay, Alma, I'd love for you to read me a book." And she took out a book by Jan Brett called "Honey, Honey, Lion" that she very much likes, proceeded to recite the book to me. She didn't read it. She's becoming pretty capable as a decoder, but she's certainly not there yet with a book like that. But she, in a very typical pre-reading way, was able to, recite significant portions of the book from memory. And it was such a revelation that she had such command of these entire sentences and pages of this book. And it took me back to moments sitting with my older daughter, Sonia, with Berenstain Bears books, doing the exact same thing. And I was reminded of the potential profundity of small moments. Such as those with our children. And I think this time in the Jewish calendar is a time when we're sort of given that gift, when our lives and our spirits and the year or the Torah, all of that is made new, and we strip ourselves and the world of everything in order to return ourselves to and see ourselves as our truest selves and as the as our most expansive, most connected selves. And it's a time when we're given the gift of defamiliarization, not just aesthetically, but spiritually. And I was reminded to stop and appreciate that fact sitting on the couch there with Alma. And so I hope that this moment of turning inward in order to turn outward, I hope that it is full of surprise for all of you. I hope it's full of wonder and mystery and full of awe. And with that, I wish you weekends full of everything and nothing. I wish you, those of you who are fasting, I wish you an easy fast. Shabbat Shalom to anyone listening on Shabbat. Thank you for being with us here this morning, and we'll look forward to being back with you soon and with more special guests in the weeks to come.